Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Oh, we're on. Hello, everybody. Hare Krishna, and welcome. And for many of the past shows, I've been talking a lot. And so I thought for this show, we should allow you the opportunity to ask questions, because I've kind of hogged the show, so to speak. So think of some questions, particularly questions that are in reference to your own personal situation in dealing with the mind, and perhaps some of the problems that you have in dealing with your mind, or some of the challenges, some of the obstacles, whatever it may be. Think of something and we can have a discussion. Welcome, Edgar. Manjesh is back after a few weeks' absence. Bhakti and Carol is eternally with us, and there will be more soon. And if you're watching now on Krishna.com, you can join the chat by hitting the chat button below my picture. I'd like to read you something. This is from Srila Prabhupada from The Path of Perfection. In the Ashtanga Yoga system, these eightfold yogas, dhyana, dharana, etc., are meant to control the mind. Sri Krishna explicitly states that a man must utilize his mind to elevate himself. Unless one can control the mind, there is no question of elevation. Unless one can control the mind, there's no question of elevation. The body is like a chariot, and the mind is the driver. If you tell your driver, "Please take me to the Krishna temple," the driver will take you there. But if you tell him, "Please take me to the liquor house," you will go there. It is the driver's business to take you wherever you like. If you can control the driver, he will take you where you should go. But if not, he will ultimately take you wherever he likes. If you have no control over your driver is your enemy. But if he acts according to your orders, he is your friend. So the mind is the driver of the vehicle, of the body. And we are the passenger. Sometimes we tell the mind where we want to go. Sometimes the mind tells us where he wants to go. It's a battle. So here Prabhupada is explaining that all the yoga systems, there's eight, what we call the Ashtanga yoga system, eight, the Eightfold Path of Yoga. This is the Yamas and Niyamas, the rules and regulations, and then the Hatha Yoga, the exercises. And then Pratyahara, the control of the senses. And then there is Dharana, which is a meditation. Ultimately there's Samadhi. I think I missed two of them. Yama Niyama and Asana, which is Hatha, and Pratyahara, controlling the senses, and then there's Dharana. Maybe there's Dharana, Dhyana, and these are different forms of meditation, a little more deep meditation, and then there's Samadhi, which is fixed meditation. So many, many places Prabhupada describes that. So please think of your questions. I'm just going to speak until I see some questions. So I will read something else. Well, here it's nice. Prabhupada says there's no question of elevation if you don't control your mind, because your mind's, as he said, the mind is the driver. So if you don't control your mind, tendency, unless you're Krishna conscious, the mind's going to drive you down. So I think an important thing to understand is that a lot of the control of the mind is done not on the spot, but it's done by creating a proper, how should I say it, by creating a proper environment within your life so that you're in situations or you're doing things which are always helping you control your mind. In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that a devotee or a mahatma, he won't put himself into any situation which would cause him to not be Krishna conscious. There are situations we could be in that would cause us to even to act against our will, or act against our better judgment. So a devotee is conscious and determined to be in situations which help us Krishna consciousness. So that's an important aspect of controlling the mind, to not get to the point where sometimes we get to this point where we say, well, I can't control, in this situation, I can't control myself. So intelligence means, well, don't get into a situation like that. So part of the way I see mind control, one aspect of it is to never allow yourself to the point where you feel you wouldn't be able to control your mind. You'd be in a situation where you wouldn't be able to control your mind, or you would just be in a consciousness because of lack, perhaps a lack of spiritual practice, that you would be weak or in not a good state of consciousness, and then you wouldn't be able to control your mind. So I know a little something about recording. In the recording industry, I think also in video, you have what's called pre-production, and then you have the production, and you have post-production. So in pre-production, you're planning out either the movie, the video, or the music, how you're going to do it, what order you're going to record it, how many instruments, who's going to play what, and so forth. So they say in the pre-production phase, you save a lot of time, because if you don't do pre-production, you get going, and then it's kind of like building a building without a blueprint. And then you'll start making mistakes. You haven't thought things out. So I think in many ways, this analogy is equivalent to controlling the mind, that much of what goes on in controlling the mind is done in the pre-production, so to speak, stage. That you're keeping yourself, or you're understanding what you need to do and how you need to live, and the proper environments you need to be in and the improper environments you need to avoid. You're doing that in advance so that you're protecting yourself from situations which could cause you to degrade yourself in some way or to not be able to discipline yourself. So that's an important factor in controlling the mind. It's not like you want to be in situations, you want to find yourself in situations where you start feeling you won't be able to control your mind, then that's already too late. So and we're all weak, so why would we put ourselves in a situation like that? It doesn't make sense. So perhaps I'm not so strong, but I'm smart enough, or at least I'm strong enough to keep myself in a situation where I won't become weak, knowing that in certain situations I will become weak, and so I prevent myself from being in those situations. So that's smart. So one of the things we find in controlling the mind is that if we're not smart, then the mind will outsmart us. So we have to outsmart the mind. So that's one way to outsmart the mind. So another way, so Bhakti and Kara has a question. So we'll take her question. Where does fear fit? Is it part of the mind's activities? Fear, we could say that just like Prabhupada says that lust exists within the senses and the mind and the intelligence. So fear is one of the conditional states of material existence, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. So it can exist in many levels, intellectually, mentally, sensually. So, but I see fear as this pre-production stage, that a lot of what's going on is a lack of faith in Krishna. Did the camera just move out there? Did you see me wiggle around? Or am I hallucinating? Yeah. Our producer is wiggling the camera. We might have to fire him. I think when he hit the table, it hit the camera. No, okay. So what they say is that when one takes sannyas, they should go to the forest and live alone, That way they learn how to depend completely on Krishna. So, you know, fear has different levels. You know, there's the fear which is part of our personality. Some people are more fearful than others, just that's their makeup. And there's the fear which is caused by a lack of faith in Krishna, or a lack of willingness to accept the way the world is and the way our lives are. But certainly we can, in dealing with fear, certainly the ability to control the mind will help us tremendously. And also the ability to reason, to look at situations and reason within our fears. And we may reason our way out of a lot of fears. And then there is the need often to act even in spite of our fears, and that comes from self-control, determination, which are all abilities which the mind can advance further, because these are forms of control. I may be afraid to do something, but I do it, even though I'm afraid. And so I have to control my mind to be able to do that. The mind is saying, because what fear is, fear means you're expecting some result that's going to disturb you or make you unhappy. So that's why you don't do it. And when you say, I'm afraid to do something, you're afraid if you do it, you'll be unhappy, you'll be uncomfortable, you'll go out of your comfort zone. In some way, you'll be uneasy. So then, with more of the mind controlled, then we can do something even though we're afraid to do it. And remain determined to go ahead, yes, I'll do this anyway, even though I'm afraid. So that's one aspect of fear, in the mind's relation to it, to be able to act in spite of it and to be able to control the mind enough to push oneself forward into doing something in which one is afraid of and go through with it. And a lot of times we find, if we go through with it, that it's not as bad as we thought. A lot of times we find that actually we're making up. We're anticipating something's going to be worse than it is. We're making assumptions which are not really true. So in any aspect of Krishna consciousness, controlling the mind is essential. It will help us in every way. Okay. Camera is steady. Good. So Edgar has a question. Carol, if that didn't answer your question, then let me know, because I can't ask you. So I have to depend on you telling me. Or if you have another, or if that has created another question in your mind, then tell me. Okay. Edgar says, I have a quick question. I hope this doesn't sound rude. In what situation could we not be able to engage our mind in Krishna consciousness? I see Krishna everywhere, even at clubs where liquor is served. So in what situation could we... Well, that depends on your level of Krishna consciousness, because on a very elevated level of Krishna consciousness, everything reminds you of Krishna and you would not be able to forget Krishna in any situation. But in an immature stage of Krishna consciousness, maybe you'll go into the liquor store and you'll remember Krishna and you'll think, yes, Krishna's the taste of liquor, but then you may end up drinking the liquor down the road. You know? So, in a more immature stage of Krishna consciousness, then we're recommended to be extremely careful about where we go, what modes we associate with, and what people we associate with. So yes, ultimately you could remember Krishna and everything could remind you of Krishna, but the fact is that in our conditioned state, even if something reminds us of Krishna, at the same time we might become attached to enjoying that thing. Just like there's a nice story in the early days of the movement, the devotees were with Prabhupada and they were watching a sunset and they were telling Prabhupada, wasn't that beautiful? And Prabhupada was saying that if you're attached to the beauty of the sunset, that's not Krishna consciousness. That's an attachment to the material world. But if the beauty of the sunset reminds you of Krishna and creates and inspires an attachment to Krishna, thinking, oh, Krishna created this sunset, he's so artistic, or he's so powerful, or he's so wonderful. That's different. So you might be in a situation which is not conducive to Krishna consciousness, but it may remind you of Krishna on some level, but it may also incite a desire to enjoy, because that desire is very strong in our conditioned state. So early on in the movement, Prabhupada recommended a schedule of activities and engagement for us, in where he said there would be no time for Maya. So there are certain activities which we could or would consider Maya. Now, how much Maya you're in by being around those activities or doing those activities is another thing. You could say, well, you know, I play sports. It reminds me of Krishna. Krishna's the ability in man. I go surfing. The sun shines as Krishna. The water, taste of water is Krishna. Krishna's the ability. Krishna gives me intelligence how to surf. So, you know, that's true to some degree, but at the same time, you could easily forget Krishna in your quest to enjoy those things. So, I don't think that's a rude question, but it's, you know, it's like you could be listening to music and say, well, I hear the ability of the composer. I hear his inspiration. That may be there, but it's not really recommended. But if we're in those situations, just then we should think that way. I was telling the devotees, I was on a plane and they had the movie Iron Man, and I was thinking of Krishna, because Iron Man was doing so many of the things that Krishna does, you know, these phenomenal things. So it reminded me of Krishna. I actually got inspired by it, but it's not recommended. I wouldn't recommend everybody go see Iron Man, because everyone may not get inspired by it, and it's not a conventional way of getting inspired in Krishna consciousness. So, okay, Carol says, there were demons who thought of Krishna, but not in a favorable way. Yes. So there's two kinds of service. Anukul Yena Krishnanu Silanam. Service should be favorable. Because then you could say, well, when I smoke marijuana, I think of Krishna. So the thinking of Krishna is favorable, but the smoking of marijuana is not favorable. So, favorable is according to the instructions of Guru. And then if service is done favorably, naturally, we become more peaceful and the mind becomes more controlled. It's less of a struggle. But service which is not favorable is generally not in line with Guru's instructions or the instructions of Sadhu, but it's more of our own imaginative process of bhakti. But there'll always be a bad result from that. If you want the best result, then you follow as closely as possible to the order of Guru, the order of Shastra, the order of Sadhu. Because within that process, it's Prabhupada has explained many times, it's scientific. So if you do it, it's going to produce the proper result. It's going to advance you in Krishna consciousness. And if you don't do it, it's going to create some problem, or it's going to slow you down. Okay. Prema Sindhu. Welcome, Prema Sindhu. Isn't that a nice name? Prema Sindhu, the ocean of love. How would you like to be an ocean of love? Actually, that's the goal. And if we want to relate that to the current discussion, then wherever there's love, that's where the mind is. So that's why, you know, it's interesting. Krishna says, mana, manmana, always think of me. Or in the beginning of the seventh chapter, Krishna's describing one whose mind is always attached to me. So Krishna's saying that's what we should do, but when you love Krishna, that's what you do. So he's telling us what we should do as what we would do when we love him. And if you love somebody in this world, you always think of them. So it's not really different. And so when we're not Krishna conscious, when we don't love Krishna, then there's a lot of discipline required. And the more attached we become to Krishna, I don't want to say the less discipline is required, because that's not exactly true, but I would like to say the less discipline is required, or I would say the discipline is more naturally there and the thinking is more naturally there because there's attraction. So ultimately, as we said before a few weeks ago, asovarjam, when there's a taste, then you'll think of Krishna because you're attracted. And if you're not attracted, then there's more of the requirement of self-discipline, self-control, and very keen intelligence. Because when we don't want to do something, we become motivated to do it through our intelligence. We know, well, this is going to be the best thing. If I don't do this, I will suffer. So let me do the right thing. So that was another thing I wanted to discuss, that you will find that whenever your intelligence is clear, it is much easier to control your mind. Or we could even say automatically your mind is controlled. It's not even a battle. It's when our intelligence becomes unclear, or our intelligence becomes weak, that the mind becomes more powerful. And then the mind can be dragging us down and we don't have the power to stop it. Whereas if our intelligence is clear and pure, that generally we don't even get to the point where the mind is pulling us hard enough that we really have to fight with it. It's because the intelligence sees things more clearly, or as we say, Shastra Chakshus, we're seeing things in line with the vision of Shastra. There's less of a pull by the material mind towards sense gratification. So the more there's a pull, the more there's an indication to us that our intelligence has become impure, because the mind is taking over. Whereas the intelligence is clear, the mind doesn't take over. Because the impetus of the mind is sense gratification. Whereas when the intelligence is pure, it counteracts the tendency for sense gratification. So the mind is naturally more in line with the intelligence. It's more subdued. It's not pushed by sensual data. But when the senses are very active, or even we go more subtle, just the very nature, you know, like sometimes devotees say, well, I'm just a big enjoyer. So if that's our nature, to be a big enjoyer, then naturally the mind's going to be disturbed all the time. Because if the senses are always desirous of enjoyment, then they're feeding that input into the mind, and then the mind is going for it. Whereas if you're a little more strict, a little more pure, a little more devoted, then you're more situated in this idea that my senses are for Krishna's enjoyment, and so naturally the mind's controlled. So if you just kind of like go back, you know, into post-production, pre-production? Pre-production is clear intelligence. Pre-production is I'm a servant of Krishna. You in pre-production, you program your intelligence and your state of being on a higher level of Krishna consciousness with a higher level of intention, and actually your mind is going to be there. Or maybe not naturally, but maybe not entirely naturally, but it's going to be there a lot more. So the reason the mind is not there, the mind is going away from Krishna, is because we want to enjoy the world. So you'll see that in any devotee who's very advanced, you'll see that the intelligence prevails, and as a result, there's not a lot of struggle with the mind. But when the intelligence doesn't prevail, then we have to struggle more with the mind. But ultimately, the paradox is, you struggle with your mind through your intelligence. So if you lose your intelligence, now you're really struggling. And you have to regain it, otherwise the mind will take you down. And then you may end up suffering, doing something that causes you suffering. And then at that point, you get your intelligence back. It's like the Three Stooges. I don't know if they have the Three Stooges on TV anymore. But when I was young, they were very popular. And so I had one of their jokes was, you know, I've been thinking. And then the other stooge would say, yeah. And he'd say, yeah, for me, that's pretty dangerous. So when our intelligence is impure, or we're not cultivating pure Krishna conscious intelligence, or we're cultivating intelligence which supports sense gratification, then that'll be our line also. Yeah, I've been thinking, and for me that's pretty dangerous because my intelligence is not plugged in here. When the intelligence is plugged in, naturally your thinking supports your Krishna consciousness. So that's really the position we want to be in. So you imagine, you know, what do they say? The psychologists say, like, you have something like 60,000 thoughts a day, like this huge number of thoughts a day, like 2,000 thoughts a minute, 2,000 thoughts, 3,000 thoughts an hour. So if you have 60,000 thoughts and they're all Krishna conscious, wow. I mean, just think how Krishna conscious you'll be. Just think how inspired you'll be. 60,000 Krishna conscious thoughts in a day. That's a lot. What about 60,000 thoughts of sense gratification in a day? Then think how hard it will be to be Krishna conscious. So when you do the math and you realize, well, how important it is to be in the proper state of consciousness, which will inspire Krishna conscious thoughts. Because you're going to have a lot of them in one day. 60,000 of them. That's a lot of Krishna consciousness. That's a lot of Maya. Isn't it? Do we get